Your doubts don't need to derail your faith. They can drive your search and your journey, and no doubts will survive an authentic search for Jesus.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and with the power of His Spirit, do better. So together, we can be a little better. Welcome back to the A Little Better podcast. We all ask questions, and some of you might be asking, why am I watching this right now? There'll be a reason, I'm sure. Some of us, and if you're like me, some of us are insatiably curious. And today, we're talking about someone, as we continue our series in Eyewitness Accounts of the Resurrection, we're talking and viewing, hearing the story of someone in the Bible, a disciple who was insatiably curious. And so, Drew, I'd love to kind of give you, we're talking about Thomas, I'd love for you to give us a bit of a frame of who Thomas was and even a little bit of the story that we're digging into today.
Yeah, Thomas was one of the disciples, so close friend to Jesus, walked with Jesus, saw Jesus do a lot of miraculous things, but he's kind of like the lone ranger in the resurrection story because he's one of the people who had to wait to see Jesus when all the disciples, Mary, some of the women got to see him. And so in that journey, they're telling him Jesus is alive, and he wrestles with this, I want to believe it, but I have questions, and I want to see the evidence of that. And so we walk through his doubt and how Jesus answered some of his doubts and really points to like the questions that we have around the resurrection, or around our faith, and how really normal doubt is. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about what we do with our doubts and how we wrestle them. And also when it comes to the resurrection, we can be confident because there's a lot of evidence that points to the fact that Jesus is alive.
Historical figures can oftentimes feel a bit abstract. Mm-hmm. Are you guys able to like color in a little bit of who Thomas was like? I've kind of described him as being insatiably curious. Maybe that's fair, maybe that's not, but there's other points where he does like question things. But can you give us a little bit more of a color in who Thomas was? What was he like?
He probably didn't have much of a filter, like between what he thought and what he spoke. You know, I mean, he definitely speaks. I mean, we know that about Peter, you know, I mean, he's the guy who's there. But Thomas has got some zingers too, you know, like when Jesus says they're going to go to Jerusalem, and Thomas almost seems like, woohoo, let's go to Jerusalem and die too, you know, because that's where everyone's trying to kill us. And then I'm sure in some ways Thomas felt, you know, morosely vindicated, you know, when Jesus did get killed. Yeah. I told you this was going to happen, right? Yeah. This was exactly what I was afraid of. But I think there's, an honesty and expression of where his heart is. And Drew, I just love what you said about, it's about what we do with our doubts, because Thomas could have fled, right, and not come back, but he did lean in. He kept asking the questions, remained part of the community, even as a skeptic or wrestler.
Yep. There's a point in John 14 where he says, this is Jesus telling the disciples, do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have not told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way, the place where I am going. So, I mean, for me, being, I'd say, on the skeptical end, I totally resonate with Thomas when he just says this, Lord, we do not know where you are going. So how can we know the way? You're just like, what? Like, yeah. So it's funny how these questions, it's like you said, he kind of can say what everyone else is thinking. Mm-hmm. But I just love that picture of Thomas. Maybe it's because I resonate with him.
And realistically, isn't that the disciples' journey? Jesus would often say things and it would take a while, right? Yeah. Like, it was just like this process of like, what the heck did he just say? And like over time, it like there's just these click moments where like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But there's the guys like Peter and Thomas who just abruptly and immediately are like, no, Jesus, you're wrong. You say we know the way, we have no clue.
Right. I wonder what he was thinking when Jesus was telling them that he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you said earlier, it's like, well, I told you so. This was going to happen. Right. And then just that how does this happen? Because people aren't used to people rising from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like the resurrection doesn't happen. Jesus wrote, like, brought people back to life.
Mm-hmm.
But someone bringing themselves back to life is mm-hmm. not really a thing to behold very often.
Yeah, I think sometimes we look back and we say, oh, yeah, but they, you know, either supernatural is nothing big to them, you know, or whatever. But right. I mean, what Jesus did was a shock when the miracles happened. Yeah. Those weren't expected. Those were a shock that was new. They had a skepticism that we share. I mean, for them, people did not rise from the dead, just like we also have that skepticism.
I think what ties to that is just the emotional roller coaster, right? Over the 2 days, they just had finally probably came to grips that Jesus was dead, mm-hmm. right? Like, so they're processing this fact that, wait, our savior, the guy who's leading the rebellion against Rome, is dead. Like, I think it was so hard for them to process that. And then all of a sudden, in a turn of a moment, he's alive. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, wait, I came to grips with, like, oh, he's mm-hmm. dead. I'm starting to figure out what I'm going to do now. Yeah. And now he's alive. Like, oh, my word.
You
now,
articulated that really well last week of Mary's confusion. Yeah. If you can, go back and listen to the message last mm-hmm. week, because I think you're right on with it. It's like, it's so discombobulating.
Yeah.
Of like, how do you make sense? Because Jesus did set up, he told them he was going to die, like set the expectation. And then you're like, that he was going to come back again. Like he wasn't going to leave them. It's like all these different things of like wrestling through these expectations and like, this is actually happening right now. So,
yeah.
We all have doubts, right?
Absolutely.
I'm curious for you guys. How have you wrestled through different areas of doubt in your life? What's that looked like for you?
You know, I think there is like two levels for me. Like one is accepting, you know, the truth of what God says. And then there's this other place to get where I accept that it's true for me. You know, so to believe that God exists, that he rose from the dead, that he's building a kingdom, that the gates of hell won't prevail against, that the people's lives are radically changed. Woo-hoo. But does he do that for me? You know, And there's, you know, my heart, you know, will break, or I'll have doubts or wrestle, why, Lord, this or that. And sometimes it's just easy, you know, to say, yeah, I guess God doesn't care or see, you know, me. So there's two battles, right? I go through the intellectual battle, you know, of, you know, is there really, you know, a God? Should those new atheists, you know, they sound pretty smart and intelligent about what they're saying. Is there reason to disbelieve the whole thing? Well, I get past that at a certain point. But then just to say, you know, what will the end of my story be? What will the end of my family's story be? That's another one where I wrestle with doubts.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm not a guy who I would say struggles with doubt a lot, just because at some level I am not in, like you, Callum, I'm not super curious. I have a gift you have. Well, I think at some level it's a gift and a curse, right? Like everything, I believe things pretty quickly, but I think oftentimes it can lead to shallow belief, right? Where it's not deep rooted. So I think there's a lot of people who catch fire for Jesus is alive, but they couldn't tell anybody why they believe it. And, mm-hmm. and so there is a curse there where like, I believe doubts can really grow deep roots, right? Where mm-hmm. not only can I tell people, man, I believe this, but let me show you why. Let me prove to you this is why. Let me back it up with logic and reason and history, right? So I think there's a beauty in having doubts, but also allowing those doubts to digger roots and also believe things that Jesus said because who he is, right? Mm-hmm. Who I believe he is based off of those doubts. But for me, one of the ways that is not a good way to like confirm your doubts, but I think God works in even our sinfulness is, you know, there's times where I'm like, I just even wonder like, okay, am I wasting my life preaching the Bible, right? Like what if all of this is not real. It's not true, right? Mm-hmm. Reality check for everybody. Even pastors think that stuff, right? Yeah. Like, this is not, so like, am I just throwing my life away? Mm-hmm. But like, even in my own life, when I doubted something, like, is God's way best, right? I think that's one of the big doubts we have, right? Like, mm-hmm. God has a lot to say about our life. Is his way really best? And so one of the ways I've done it in the wrong way is like, okay, I'll try the world's way. And what's amazing is I found out is like, when I went down the world's way, my life didn't get better. Mm-hmm. My life got, maybe for a season, but like over time, it got worse. It got more stressful. It got more anxious. And then I go back to God's way. I'm like, wow, there is purpose and meaning. And like, mm-hmm. so I wrestle with doubts, but God just always like, what I love about God is like, when he says, when you seek him, mm-hmm. he will seek you, right? He will draw close to you. And every time that I've had doubts or wrestled with them, what I've seen in God is it doesn't come in an instant or a moment. Sometimes it comes in a week, a year. Is God, like, when I draw near to God and I have questions, he does bring answers and he draws close to me. And it's not always in a fulfilling, like, oh, he gave me all the answers, mm-hmm. but he gave me enough to trust him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's God's great. You mentioned those times of like trying the world's way or trying an alternative. And it's God's grace to live long enough to exhaust the satisfaction and hope in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, for those I love far from God, I'm just praying that they live long enough to see the vanity, you know, the emptiness and the lie, that there is no God.
Mm. Just over the last couple of weeks, I've realized how much of an idol control is for me. Mm. Not controlling other people. I don't really... Probably at times there's four, this comes from Keller's Counterfeit Gods. There's like four deep idols of power, control, approval, and comfort. And I think we can oscillate. An idol is really anything that we run to that is not God, that's a synthetic substitute for him. Mm. And I realized that control, in wanting to make sure that my environment is predictable enough that I'm secure, that I'm, mm-hmm. I'm not surprised by something. So I will control things, or I like to figure things out so that I can have a semblance of control. And I've realized how much, and I'm really wrestling right now, this is very current, of wondering how much my curiosity is driven by that idol of control.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
That for Thomas too, how much of this is... How much of our questioning and our doubt is really trying to control something, bottle something, frame something that we cannot control? Mm-hmm. If you know where that line is, please let me know in the comments. Like, because I don't fully know, but there comes a point where we can exhaust the questions, we can exhaust things, and there comes a point where you just have to embrace that God is in control, that by kind of releasing and trusting.
Yeah. I think that's an important gap to talk about when it comes to doubts, because, you know, for Thomas, what's hard for us is, as Christians, is like all of Thomas's questions were fully answered, right? Mm. He was like, I want to see Jesus and I want to touch his scars. And he got exactly what he wanted. Mm-hmm. But I know in my own reality, and the one thing that many people wrestle with is we expect when we have a question or a doubt that God's going to give us all of the answer. And what I have found normally in my life is God gives me enough to see, but there's a gap of trust that I think you're talking about, this line of like, I also have to be able to trust God that he is God and I am not. And for some reason, he chose not to give me the perfect full answer that maybe he gave Thomas.
Well, like, without the gap, where is faith?
Right, exactly. Right? Yep.
And I think that's why Jesus even praises, you know, gives an encouragement to us that we can even have a more esteemed place than Thomas, because we can have faith without the sight.
I just find it so fascinating that you mentioned earlier that Thomas was the one who had to wait a week. Mm. So I'll say the parallel to my story. Like, there was one time I prided myself in having like all of my visa documents, like up to speed. I knew what was going on. I would carry like a thick folder of all of my documents. So at border control, if they asked me for anything, I had it. Mm. Like,
yeah.
And in 2012, I got denied entry because I didn't have the right visa stamp or something like that. And that sent me into a spiral. I'm like, what do you mean? And there's moments as I look back in the times where God really rattled me, or I felt like I was really rattled, was the situations where I think God led me to show me how I'm not in control. Mm. And what do I do about it? When I'm not in control and it's outside of my purview, do I get rattled by it or do I trust him?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fascinating in those moments that God made Thomas wait.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, in that gap,
right?
Are you going to trust me? Yeah. And that doesn't mean have no doubt, but it's the are you going to crumble in the week? Or are you going to wait patiently in the week?
Yep.
Because I'm going to show you. I'm going to answer you.
Yeah.
But in that week is where I think the refining, I want to believe like that was a very refining week for Thomas.
Yeah,
we don't need knowledge, we need trust.
I go back and forth with Thomas because at some level I'm like, he gets a bad rap, but he also had a whole lot more people telling him, right?
Sure.
Mary was one of the first, right? So that's harder, right? When you're the first on the front lines, you got to believe something that no one else believes, like, okay. And then Mary goes to the disciples, they struggle, but now all of them are believing. So Thomas is listening to all of his trusted friends. Like, I would think, like, if all my friends are like, dude, this happened, mm-hmm. Because I'm not insatiably curious, right? I'm like, yeah, okay, I believe you. Why would you guys lie to me? So mm-hmm. Thomas has that. So I'm like, okay, come on, Thomas. Like, why would all of them lie to you?
Sure. We were just doing financial peace. So if you're following along in financial piece, this will make sense. But in it, they were talking about the amygdala, which is the fight, flight, or freeze part of your brain. And then the prefrontal cortex, which is the rational side of your brain. And when the amygdala, fight, flight, or freeze is activated, it kind of disconnects your prefrontal cortex. Mm. I think we have different thresholds or different ways in which our amygdala is activated and disconnecting our prefrontal cortex. So for Thomas, it was like not having that concrete thing sent him into fight, flight, or freeze. Mm. Like I can't imagine, like my guess is he went into fight mode. He was like wrestling, like how, what do you mean? Like we have no idea what that week of conversation was like. How do you mean that? Like what did he look like? What, yada, 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 yada. And so it turned off the rational side in him. And I think for many of us that disconnect happens at different thresholds.
Sure.
So for you, for instance, you mentioned like the rational part comes very easily. There's probably other things in your life where the amygdala is reacted and the rational goes out the window.
Sure.
Brad, I'm curious from your standpoint on the rational front. I think the enlightenment of Western thought got us very much into the rational side of things. It caused us to become hyper-rational in many ways. I'm wondering mm-hmm. how that the Enlightenment has helped us or hurted us when it comes to processing Jesus and the resurrection.
Yeah, I do think it exalts our kind of role in the process that we can somehow rationally come to a solid conclusion. Not that, you know, rationality is always part of it, right? I mean, God gave us brains. It should, and we see it. I mean, Thomas is, he's working through rational arguments and skepticism. Yeah. So it's not that rationality, but it's just like, where is that ultimate, you know, trust? I think, I feel like I'm going to move fast through this so people aren't bored very long. But, you know, people have kind of divided up history into like a pre-modern, a modern, and even a post-modern, uh-huh. you know, culture. So that borderline between pre-modern and modern really is seen at the Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Descartes that said, I think, therefore I am. And what's interesting about that, it's like he's now kind of moved the basis for reality, not to something out there, but to something in here. It's just like, it's what we experience, what we know, what we see. That's kind of validation, the measure of reality, or what we can trust. And therefore, we have this journey of rationally building. And then we get to this crazy conclusion that the only thing that's real is what I can see or touch. And that's almost like Thomas, right? Yeah. He's saying, oh, unless I see it, unless I touch it, it's not real. And we see that today in modern theories, you know, of materialism, you know, scientific, huge. You know, naturalism, that just says the only thing that exists is time, matter, energy. And if we can't measure it, there is no transcendent reality. That's arrogant, right? To say reality is only bound, you know, by what we can see. And enlightenment certainly put us on that path. But to say instead that reality is something out there, and it makes sense that some of it I can see, some of it I can't, and what I see, is it sufficient to give me trust for what I don't see?
Right.
I just think that's the story I see in Job, because Job, he asks these questions and they never get answered. Right, God shows up. He never tells him why Job is going through what he's going through. He never defends his actions. He just says, have you seen me? Have you seen the things I've done? Mm. Do you think that maybe if I can do all this, I can be trusted? Mm. And I do think, so again, yeah, we want control. You know, it's all of that, right? We want, but we have to live as dependent. You know, there is going to be an unknown. The question is what we know sufficient to take that leap?
And I think there's a balance there. Like, I think, and you look at people, there's two types of people, just to like be really shallow and narrow it down to two stereotypes. There's people who like drive with their gut and people who drive with data, right? Mm-hmm. Or evidence, right? Mm-hmm. And so like I always look at like the resurrection and like what role do these two things play? Because I'm a gut guy, right? Like if I in my gut, I'm like, this is real, I believe it, right? You don't even need to show me any data. I'm like, that man, it's this emotional rot. But like, that's, again, we go back to like, that's can be really shallow. But then there's this data, this evidence. And like, when you can move your gut and your emotions and evidence together, I think that makes a beautiful, deep level of walking with God that I think a lot of people lean one way or the other. And
absolutely,
I think both of those things together really produce a maturity and a depth of faith that is really hard to find in today's culture.
I'd like to kind of round the corner and speak to the person that is dealing with an element of doubt. Now, I'm not saying, and that could come in various like stages. It could be like, I am doubting that God is real. I'm doubting that there's evidence to show that Jesus rose from the grave. I'm doubting, like, all there's various questions that we have. But if we can view like doubt in general, when someone is questioning God, questioning faith, questioning these things, what are some ways in which you can advise them, help them as they're going through either a season or doubt or going through some of these questions?
I think the first thing I would tell you is, just because you doubt doesn't make you like a second class Christian, right? I think a lot of people, when they have really hard questions, they feel like they're failing God, or they feel like there's something wrong with them. And I want to like rebuke that. I want you to feel normal in your questions, because I think at some level, God stirs those questions in you to reveal more of himself to you. And so like, I want to normalize doubt, right? I want to make it okay. But I would say what you do with that is really, really important. It's not the doubt that is bad. It's how we respond to it that can be bad. And so, don't sweep it under the rug. What I would advise you to do is find a safe place, a trusted person or group or pastor or whoever you trust, and sit with them and be like, hey, I'm struggling with this, or here's the questions I have. Will you walk with me through this journey to seek God, to find him, and to get the answers to what I need? And then I would warn you, you might not get the full answer, and that's okay.
Good point.
I love that, Drew. Yeah, just it would be far worse, like, to have doubts and to be silent about it, or just put on this brave face, or just, you know, get up there. I mean, you could imagine the ultimate, you know, of you having doubts, but then getting up there and pretending they didn't exist and trying to tell everyone else your doubts shouldn't exist or don't exist. So thank you for an authentic, you know, ministry, teaching, way, you live your life. But just, I love that. Just if the doubts are real, and then there's always that pressure, like someone will talk to you and want to make it better, and you want to let them know that they made it better or just stop talking about it. But, you might, it might be a long journey, right? Yeah. It might be repeated, encounters there.
And can I speak to the person who is actually on the opposite side of that? I think sometimes how Christians respond to people with doubts is half the problem, right?
Yeah. So
we make people feel like, how could you doubt that? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think if someone's coming to you and asking you questions, honor their questions. Thank you for trusting me. Mm-hmm. I love that question. And in fact, maybe you've had that same question. Hey, I've been where you are, right? Mm-hmm. I think some of those things just help people to breathe, and then it opens their heart to actually listen to what you have to say. And I think for us as Christians, be okay not being, it's okay for you not to be able to answer all of their questions, mm-hmm. right? It is okay for you to look at them and say, hey, here's what I know, but I've also learned there's some things in life that I just have to trust God. There's a gap there. Mm-hmm. And I think we as Christians, we try to somehow manipulate an answer, and it all it does is just build more doubt in someone. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to be honest with people and be like, hey, I want you to know, as we walk through this journey, you might not get the answer you're looking for or the full answer you're looking for. And I think how we respond to people's doubts is just as important as how people seek doubts. And mm-hmm. so let's be humble in how we handle people. Let's be kind, and let's walk with people through that journey, because we've all been there.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful. I do know, even in my own family, where there's people that they've hidden their doubts mm-hmm. because they thought they would reveal their doubts, it means we don't love them anymore or we're not. And just for people to express their doubts, for us to express unconditional love for them is mm-hmm. so powerful and to, still be committed to them. I think the last thought when you asked that question was just spend time with Jesus. Jesus was, God was unbelievably gracious to Job in showing up. Jesus was unbelievably gracious to Thomas in showing up. And there's an open door for every one of us. We have the Gospels. They're reliable. They're accurate records of what happened. Go spend time with Jesus. Mm. Read those Gospels. Soak into that story. Spend time
with
him.
Brad, what did you say in pre-preach? I loved how you said it. You said there's no doubt big enough that Jesus won't over-pursue. I'm butchering what
you
said.
Your doubts don't need to derail your faith. They can drive your search and your journey, and no doubts will survive an authentic search for Jesus.
Oh, that's right. Say that one more time.
Your doubts don't need to derail your faith. They can drive your search.
Now the last part,
part. No doubts will survive a genuine search for Jesus.
Mm. Yeah, no doubts can
survive. A genuine search for Jesus.
That's sweet. That's really encouraging to me. Mm. And because like I said at the beginning, I really wrestle with this. And I want to just even put an exclamation mark on not doing it alone. Mm. I've seen a lot of people fall off the faith because they've had doubts over the last handful of years. And they've retreated into isolation. Mm-hmm. They'll go to social media, they'll go to down the rabbit hole of YouTube and find a bunch of random voices and have made the litmus test or the answers to their questions some random voice that they don't know.
Yep.
And some thought that feels right. Mm. An answer that is right is not always what feels right.
It's mm-hmm. so true.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, you might not be the answer you want. And so I know for myself, the amount that I talk to Matt Soans about this stuff and all the questions that I have is really helpful for me. Mm. So find the right person where you can ask the questions, wrestle through these things. Mm-hmm. What really helped for me was moments of solitude. And I realized that those are the moments where I'm giving up control. That a moment of quiet and being in his presence is a way in which I can trust a very basic way of communing with God. And so hopefully this has been a really encouraging conversation for you. Our church is here to walk with you, not just staff, but our congregation. Like, let's be walking this journey of faith. This, it can feel really complex. It can be really confusing. We have our doubts, but at the center of all is the grace of Jesus, and it comes because he rose from the grave. And so we are just building up to Easter, and we hope that you will join us, not just in this journey up to Easter, but on this journey of walking the long road of obedience to Jesus. See you next week.